From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made, or in some ways it was not made, a week ago. The Rochester City School District challenged the community to make sure students were prepared for the first day of classes. They set an attendance goal of 95%, and there's a reason for that number. We're going to be talking about that. But only 83% showed up for classes the first day. The Rochester School District has a low graduation rate, around 43% graduating over 4 years, with a statewide graduation rate of about 75%. Rochester maintaining the lowest graduation rate among major cities in New York State. Well, Superintendent Bolhan Vargas is targeting a number of ways to change all of that. And while the first day attendance goal fell short, he's confident that the numbers can rise, that there is room to work with parents, with students, and the entire community. The Superintendent Bolhan Vargas is here in studio. Thank you for joining us here.
Thank you for having me.
95% was the number you wanted, 83%. And I hesitate to frame this question as why did you fail, because I think there's a large community component here. I mean, you're not the one necessarily getting kids out of bed ready for school, and there's complex issues involved. But why do you think the number wasn't 95%?
For multiple reasons. For too long in this community, children have been missing in school, and we haven't paid, given the attention that this issue deserves. The reality is that most of our children are able to come to school every day. So the question, why not? So when a first grader, a 6 years old child, is not coming to school, that's a family, community, and a school issue. And that's why I'm asking everyone to work with me and our teachers and administrator to make sure that we get our children to school every day. We talk about poverty often, and yes, that is a factor that cannot be discounted. But the reality is that if we work together, there's no question in my mind that when I do an analysis of the data, I find that the children that I come into school every day has similar challenge that the kid that I not. And there is a level of expectation that we need to have of ourselves, that we are going to work together to make sure that at the very least we get our children to school. The other reason that I set the goal 95% is because you could tell how our graduation rate is going to be by looking at a cohort student in sixth grade. If a child, for example, have missed a year or more of school coming from poverty, that means that child is behind in reading, in math, and the graduation rate for a school that has, let's say, like East High School, that the first day of school was around 74%, that means more than a quarter of the population was not coming to school. The graduation rate, according to the best research that I've seen, would be around 45%. Which is what we get in there, less than the East, or in any or the district school. Also, when you have a significant number of students that are not coming to school, also it tells you a little bit about the community. So it's sort of like a community indicator. So if Rochester want to change, which I believe we do, and we need desperately to improve our community, and the lives of our students for our own future and for their future, you just have to look at attendance and you will be able to tell a lot. We do know, for example, if you talk to a police officer, and we're just going through a very difficult time through the tragic situation with our police officer that we lost, they will tell you that they begin to see kids that are missing school getting in trouble with the law, not to mention the consequences or lack of high school diploma in terms of for employment, for the quality of life. And it's such an important component. We do know that the state of New York and throughout the 50th state, they require children to go to school by law. And there's a reason for it. And the reason is because it has an impact in society and our children's lives.
Now, you're saying that if you look at East High, 74% attendance first day, or district-wide, 83% attendance, you're saying that we can't just assume that the 17% who didn't show up or the 26% at East High who didn't show up that first day have drastically different circumstances than the kids who are showing up?
Well, that is correct. When you look, well, people tell me you had 90% of your children on free and reduced lunch. Well, when you had 90%, you do the math. You know that the children that are showing up are also in free and reduced lunch. But what I will tell you is this, that this is what I do know, that if you don't develop a high expectation from the families and the community and the school from the day that that kid entered pre-K and kindergarten, I could tell you with great confidence that based on the research available to us, that you could tell a lot about where the children is going to end up when they start on kindergarten. But this community and this school district, for a very long time, have ignored the attendance, which is a driver for achievement for our students. And we talk every year about graduation rate being so slow. So low. If you want to change the graduation rate, begin with improving our attendance rate, which we have to work on that issue every day. The families, they had to work on this, and the community, and the school district. We had the ultimate responsibility for educating our children, but we cannot do it alone. As I said, we cannot give all our children a stable neighborhood. We cannot give them, in some cases, a stable family, but we can work together to make sure that at least we do one thing and do it right, and that is getting our children to school every day.
And I think that a lot of people will take these comments and they will admire the fact that you're saying, let's not make excuses, but at the same time, we've had conversations on this program about the nature of poverty, and sometimes I think the media, me included, overgeneralize the word poverty. Poverty is not poverty is not poverty. I mean, a child on a free and reduced lunch may be in very different circumstances. You may have two working parents who are, or a parent who's working and a parent who's out of work. You may have a single parent household where the parent is working but you're still in poverty. Or you may come from a home where you're being raised by a kinship caregiver because the parents essentially are out of the picture or there's drugs or crime, etc. Circumstances are, that cohort of poverty and free and reduced lunch is very different child to child. And for some of the kids who are missing school, it may be more extreme, right?
That is correct. But again, we are capable. If there's possibility to get children to school, then there's a way to get them to school, regardless of their situation. Now, that is not to ignore the multiple challenges that our children face. It's no easy work, but I do believe that us together, that we can improve the situation. We could do better than what we are doing. For example, not long ago, a sad situation here. A 14-year-old child, engaged into a shooting situation with a police officer at 10 o'clock. So the school, for 2 years, that child wasn't in school. So where were the adults? And that began with the school district. Where were the community? Where was the family? Now, again, it is possible to get our children to school if we work together.
You're talking about Taekwon Rivera in that case.
Yeah, I'm talking about that, and it's unfortunate. But when I became superintendent, one thing that I said is I'm going to clean up attendance. Never again are we going to have a situation in which our children are going to be missing school and we go on ignore. When I came in, I had one school. In this case, East High School, for example, graduation rate would be even higher than what it is, but because we were not taking the attendance in accurately. So I find out that 138 children at East High School have been missing a year, two, or three. How are you going to improve a system if you don't do the fundamental? So what we are doing, basically in an analysis that me and my team had done, is that we are going to concentrate on the fundamental, and that no reform will work. As much as I appreciate what the U of R is doing, you know, the president of the university deserves a lot of credit on the U of R community and the East High School community for taking on this challenge. But we are not going to succeed unless we improve the attendance rate of children at East High School and throughout this district.
My guest for the hour is Superintendent of the Rochester City School District, Bolton Vargas. You touch on East High School. There may be questions, and you know that this has been an emotional conversation. Whenever you have a school, East High School or elsewhere, where you've either got closure, changes, now you've got the University of Rochester coming in and essentially managing the school, why do you need a university to manage a school? What's the benefit there?
Well, they bring a fresh perspective. They bring resources. They bring expertise. And also, they bring a new way. See, I believe that you can solve this problem if it would work together.
And are we talking about, now we're talking about attendance, Dr. Vargas, and you talk about getting kids to school, getting families involved. It's one thing to challenge them publicly. What are some other tangible things the district is doing this year to sort of facilitate more kids showing up?
Absolutely. For example, we're putting at least, and it's not enough, one social worker in every school. We're giving our children more music, more art, more extracurricular activity. We're trying to meet our children academic, social, emotional, and physical need. And we are doing that by using multiple approaches. One of them is, like, and I said this, our schools have to close the opportunity gap that exists between the city and the suburb. I used to work in the Greece Central School District, for example, AP classes, music, art, counseling services, and all the services were available at sport. See, I believe that we have to make our school more interesting than the street. And one of the things that we are doing, we are rebuilding our sport program at the middle and high school level. For example, we are bringing a football team to Monroe High School for the first time in 30 years. So we also are putting in a district-wide band. And you should have seen the kid the other day at East High School. You can't just talk about student engagement and then not give the students the opportunity to participate. You can't just ask a kid to read Shakespeare, Romeo and Juliet, and not give that child an opportunity to participate in a play or on a musical. And then at the same time, saying that kid is not motivated or doesn't like to come to school. And sadly, too many of our school go year-round with years. We are putting a play. So we can talk about a high-level educational reform until we close the opportunity gap. And one of the things that I have been able to do with my team is to make sure that we spend our money well.
By the
Because you have to pay for some of these things. I have added more music, more art, more sport, more extracurricular activity. We used to give our children the least amount of instructional time to the children who arguably needed the most. We ended that. And now we have some school that are doing more for children. Now, you're not going to see result overnight as I want to, and everyone in this community want to. But when you had a system for years was giving the least amount of instructional time to the children that needed the most, you know, there's a generational impact. And also there's consequences that we are going to deal with for some years to come.
We're going to be getting to your calls in a moment here. Now, you talk about arts, and arts are a great way, in your mind, to give kids the desire to be in school instead of on the street, for example. So how do the SODAs of the world, in terms of in your district, some schools are more art-centric, how are their attendance rates compared to district averages?
Much better. You know, they reach, actually, interesting that you say, we had a two school that made it.
Two schools that reached 95% on the first day.
Yep, SODA was one, and also the school 58. So that was great, and it is possible. But see, we used to have this great school, Wilson, and it's still every school is great, has something great in it. But there is many of them, many of our school are missing fundamental stuff. Like, for example, when I came to Wilson, we had a half a music teacher. How are you going to have a band with half a music teacher? How are you going to put a play or a musical if you don't have a good functioning band, let's say? So we are paying attention to bring more of that, and I do believe, and for example, we expanded our art and music and sport program, and we are beginning to do that, and we're adding more social worker. We do believe that poverty could be mitigated. So a child may not have a stable family or a family with the resources necessary to provide them with a music lesson. You know, to take them to a private music lesson, but the school has a responsibility to provide those kind of opportunity. Because, by the way, if you move 5 miles from here, those opportunities are available to your children, and it is our strategy, it is our goal to close the opportunity gap, and we did that in one area, and I'm happy to declare this: the Rochester City School District today offer more opportunity to our children for pre-K and kindergarten than any other district in Monroe County. Our families have more opportunity, more access, actually a guarantee that they will receive a seat in a pre-K kindergarten class, full day in both cases. That is not the case throughout this county. And we have to do this in every area. And we will if we stay, you know, we have to be well-disciplined. We have to have some assistant that has some accountability. And we have to have a system that is responsive to the needs of our students and is responsive to the needs of the people who work there in our community.
And so, in other words, music and arts are often viewed as fat in some districts that can be trimmed if the budget is tight. You're saying that has a very dangerous effect on student attendance and performance and graduation.
This superintendent would be the last thing that I would cut.
Gotcha. Now, before we get to the phones, we have heard from parents who tell us that, you know, they're concerned that wealthier families are, in some cases, they use the term abandoning the district. And by that, they mean either by moving out of the district or wealthier families sending their kids to private schools. And everything that I've read indicates that roughly, is it half or two-thirds of the city's white children don't attend city schools? Is that correct, Dr. Vargas?
Yeah, it's around that. Many of them go to private school.
Okay. Now, do you think that well-to-do families in Rochester have a responsibility to send their kids to the city school district?
I do think that every child, every parent look at the best interest for their children. And if you were to come to school and that school doesn't have the resources, like well-established, let me tell you, for example, we talk about replicating programs. And the saddest thing for me was when I went to school number 10, which is attempting to replicate and offer similar approach the school 58, which has been a school that has succeeded. I was there, you know, for the second week of school when it opened. As an interest superintendent, I was visiting our school. So I was in school 10, and I went to the library, and the library was packed with children. So I was just happy. I mean, it just gave me great joy. You know, I said, well, I can see this school going to become like a school 58, only to be disappointed when I asked the librarian there. She told me the reason they were so packed with children because she was there only one time per week. So how could you ask a parent, poor or rich, to overlook that having a well-staffed library, it should be an essential element
every day,
for our
every
school
day
every day?
Yeah.
And a district that is struggling in the area of readings, How can we overlook that?
Yeah, it's fair. That's a fair enough point. Let's grab some calls here. This is Paul in Brighton. Paul, thanks for calling. You're on with Superintendent Bohan Vargas.
Thank you very much. I'm a lifetime educator, now partially retired. I met with administrators at East High School earlier this year and have had conversations with School 17 concerning exactly what you've been discussing, the lack of arts activities, particularly for kids in the middle school range, and the effect that that can have on attendance. I'm an arts person with considerable success in implementing these kinds of programs in inner city environments, although not in Rochester until recently. So I'm going to follow this up. East High School has had, with 1,800 students, next to nothing in the way of arts activities for its students in the after-school setting. And by the way, after school, I emphasize, because you can do a tremendous amount of good for young teenagers by offering them something after school. In addition to that, I would support these programs with not only an arts activity, but with a few volunteers around who can help with academic issues that many of these kids have, and generally be aware of social needs and other things that kids might be able to get if somebody would just hear what those needs were. That kind of program geared, in other words, to the kids you're dealing with, instead of geared, you know, designed like a program in the suburbs where the kids don't have these issues, is both less expensive than lots of other things that people try to do in the schools, and would probably be quite successful in helping to improve the attendance, which is so critical, as you described.
Paul, thanks for the call. Let's let the superintendent respond. Go ahead, Superintendent Vargas.
Well, thank you, Paul. I totally concur. And as I say, we have to find ways to make sure that these programs are sustainable. It's fair for our children, and if we want to see middle-class students coming back to the district, we have to create middle-class-like school, and it is possible. And for example, middle-class families look for high-quality programs in the area of not just art, music, sport, and extracurricular activity, but also in academic, AP, IB, and those type of programs, and I believe that we can create schools in Rochester that is possible to do it. However, there's a price, you know, to be paid. You cannot do everything. When everything is a priority, nothing is a priority. So we're going to have to be more disciplined as a district to prioritize our effort and to make sure that we can sustain it financially. I mean, we do know, like you observed earlier, that we used to have some of the best art, music, sport program in the city of Rochester, and they went away through budget cut, and that they're the first to go. But we have a strategy in the Rochester City School District to close our budget gap, to finance our program, and the only fear that I have is that we will get too distracted. And people will say, well, we can't do this or we can't do that. I'm a very positive person. I believe that in the long run, leadership is about being positive, but it's also about being firm and flexible and also having clear priorities. And for too long, we've been talking about improving our schools, and we have been discounted the fundamental.
Talking to Superintendent Bohan Vargas from the Rochester City School District. Earlier this week, the American Academy of Pediatrics came out with new recommendations that no middle or high school should start any earlier than 8:30. They cited attendance, tardiness, school performance, and essentially a kid's circadian rhythm, and research that indicates it's hard to get kids in bed early and it's hard to get them up early, and that one good thing for kids' health and performance academically and attendance would be starting school at 8:30 or later. You agree or disagree with that, Paul, about that?
That research has been around for quite some time, and now introduce again. So I'm, as a former school counselor, I would tell you that sleeping matters, particularly for a youngster. And for the middle school kid, there's no question. There's issue of transportation and all the logistic that I believe that those kind of things fall in what I call the fundamental, and that we can definitely do better. We also, what you're going to see, the school of the future for the people who work there and the student themselves, that we don't know everybody had to show up at the same time, so we could have all the children that might be most suitable coming early, and the middle school children could come at the most appropriate time. But for too long, you know, and this is part of the landscape of the nation in terms of school calendar and school schedule and school time, we have been treating time as a constant rather than a variable. So anytime that someone suggests something to talk about time, I'm always encouraged. Because in order to be innovative in our education system, we're going to have to look about how we use our time and what's the whole notion about around school schedule, school calendar that we're going to have to revisit.
We got to take a very, very short break. We're going to come back with more of your phone calls and more with Rochester Superintendent Bohan Vargas as they look at attendance, improving schools. I'm going to ask him how he evaluates what makes a teacher a good teacher, and how do you keep the good young teachers that seem to have a high turnover rate. All of those issues and more coming up next on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, Why I Stayed. That's the powerful meme going around on social media following the release of the Ray Rice video. Janae Rice is standing by her husband. We'll have a panel that will explore the complex issues involving abuse and why it can be so difficult for victims to leave. That's coming up next hour on Connections.
Continuing this week, The Little, Land Ho is a comic story of friendship set amid the haunting beauty of Iceland. Mitch, a retired surgeon who can't quite admit to being retired, recruits his reluctant pal Colin for a holiday abroad. Iceland's vast landscapes form a primordial Eden, the perfect backdrop for the friends' escapades. As Mitch exclaims when Colin's spirits dampen, "Don't get that Sunday afternoon attitude, good times are still a-comin'." See details at thelittle.org.
Welcome back to Connections with Rochester Superintendent Bohan Vargas. The average school district in New York State has a turnover rate for teachers, from what I can tell, of around 15%. And the latest that I had heard from Rochester, and you can correct me if this is wrong, is that the average Rochester teacher turnover rate is more like double that, around 28, 29, 30%. And with young teachers, or at least teachers with 5 years or fewer experience, it's something like 50%. First of all, those numbers accurate?
Yeah, they are, and there's, we went, particularly in recent year. Remember when I first arrived here, we had 804 people were being laid off, 700 which were teachers. So when you had that kind of stability, and in Rochester, one of the things that we have been suffering for quite some time, which we are putting an end to it, is this budget every year. You know, yeah. And we are bringing a stability, and I hope that with the stability that we bring to our budget process, we build more confidence on teachers to stay, and also we need to address, you know, some of the challenges. For example, back to attendance. Do you know what it is for a teacher who teaching a class with 20 kids, and every day five students I know in it, and then of those five, they are not the same five. You know, that's the complexity around attendance.
Good luck having continuity, right?
Exactly. Right. So it is a very challenging situation, and we are looking into, you know, to improve the retention of teachers. We do know that we're going to have to do a lot of work around supporting our teachers, also supporting our students. And that's why I insist that we have discipline in how we spend our money now, and in order for us to create that kind of stability.
But when it comes to spending money and budgets, again, I know it's tight. Author Dana Goldstein's new book is called The Teacher War. She was on this program last week. She says a big problem is that young teachers are leaving the profession for a couple of reasons. First, she says, teacher salaries go up very slowly. So if you're 25 and you're thinking of buying a house and starting a family, you know that by the time you're 35, you're not going to be making that much more money as a teacher. Mm-hmm. She wants, even if you don't pay teachers more out of the gate, she wants their salaries to rise at a faster rate. Do you disagree with that?
Well, the compensation matter, but also I do believe that an assistant, like take for example an assistant, most teachers are motivated by the school environment, just like the students are and the communities are. So it's a complex problem that money alone. Now in Rochester, to be quite honest with you, we compensate our teacher quite fairly in this sense of Rochester teachers. I guaranteed to be in the top one-third of the county. That's an agreement that's been in place for a very long time, and yet they leave us some time to go to a less-paying district. So we had to unpack that, and what you will find is sometimes it's just security. Well, for you, as you know, in the current system that we have, if the newest teacher are the first to go when you have budget problem, right? So when you, and you've been around this community for a long time, and you know that every April in the springtime, you begin to hear about the budget and the budget and the budget. And, you know, that's why I began to prioritize and say, what does do we need to do as a system to bring stability? And that is to bring more fiscal management, to be more disciplined, to be more careful. To make sure that you build confidence. And by the way, the same thing goes for families. Many families left us because of the programs that they value and treasure were gone, and they knew what was going to happen to the school. And also the teacher turnover, and we are doing a lot of work around the area, but our strategy, again, is an overarching strategy that is not just retaining teacher. If you retain teacher but you don't have the right programs and services for kids, that alone will not do it.
Okay, so in other words, paying teachers more and teachers making more in urban districts, and Goldstein writes this in her book as well, that is not a slam dunk way to keep good teachers, and that's what the research has indicated across the country. That's what Dr. Vargas is saying here. She also, though, the author says that the practice of LIFO, and you just referenced it, last in, first out, she says it's a problem, and it means that the youngest teachers are often the first to be dismissed. I want to listen to part of my conversation with author Dana Goldstein about LIFO, and then I'll get the superintendent's take on this issue, along with his take on teacher evaluation.
If a school is having budget cuts and they need to reduce the teaching force because of that, it basically dictates that the senior-most teachers are protected and the youngest and least experienced teachers are let go. And the conclusion I came to in my research is that now that we know so much more about what effective teaching looks like, it doesn't really make sense to use seniority as the only factor. Instead, seniority should be a tiebreaker when teachers are of varying levels of effectiveness.
But, you know, again, part of the argument is that it is difficult to assess a teacher's quality, and unions say that without LIFO, good older teachers can be unfairly targeted.
I don't agree with the idea that it's impossible to assess a teacher's quality. I think the best way to assess it is by having a great instructional leader and an effective principal actually go into the teacher's classroom and see what the teacher is doing. We come up with a lot of complex ways in this country to evaluate teachers' work, a lot of complicated mathematical formulas, value-added measurement that looks at kids' test scores. What I argue for is something simpler, something that really looks at how the teacher is engaging with students in the classroom, whether the students are responding to that. Does the teacher know his or her subject matter? So I reject the idea that it's impossible to tell the difference between an effective and an ineffective teacher.
All right, so a couple of things to unpack there. Number one, is LIFO a problem?
It's a challenging course, particularly for a city like Rochester. When you have 700 teacher being laid off, which happened, I'd hate to go back to it, but this was about 3 years ago when I first came in 2011. Of course, it's going to have an impact. As a superintendent, I would love to being able to see, well, maybe I could, in a more thorough way, examine who should I keep, who should be lay off, although might be temporarily. But I do understand the consensus of the more senior teacher, because the argument also has been that, well, they get paid more. So if the budget is contributing to that, they might be a motivational factor. But I do think that done right and with in a collaborative, trusting way, I think that would benefit the profession, the teacher profession, and also I believe we benefit the students. The only thing that I will add to that is that there are law in place today that they couldn't get rid of a person because of their age or because they're oldest workers. That maybe when come to the teaching of public employer, that we can strengthen in that and find way to resolve that issue, because indeed, particularly in my observation, three years ago when you had a 700 teacher and you just had to use a numerical formula, that doesn't necessarily is the best way in the 21st century to go about dealing with such a complex problem, which has a serious impacts not just on the lives of our students, but also on the school stability and all that area.
And the author also touched on teacher evaluation. How do you assess a teacher's performance?
Well, I think she mentioned student engagement. It's very important. You also, as a profession, a teacher has to be open to peer review, just like all the profession, and also had to be, one's had to assess the contribution that the teacher is making to student learning. No profession can be called a profession if they didn't agree with me that by definition they had to have values to teaching and learning. And doesn't mean that you don't take into account all the complexity and factor, like, for example, in the Rochester City School District, like attendance, for example. We do know that if the student are not showing up, how can you fairly accurately assess the student achievement? But you could, for example, ask and evaluate to what extent is the teacher engaging the student and to help with the attendance issue, for example. That doesn't mean that the teacher alone can do that. They need families and they need community and they need district and all that to help.
All right, let's get some of your comments and questions in. This is Jim and Holly. Jim, thanks for calling Connections. Go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. I'm a grandparent of a new kindergartner in the city school district. We're very excited about the OLA program at School 12. And you just should just see her face light up when we talk about going to school. It's great. So my question has to do with something you said, Dr. Vargas, about failure to get kids to school is against the law. And I just wonder, how is that law enforced? And what kind of consequences are delivered to parents who don't get their kids to school? And that's obviously in the context of a lot of poverty and family dysfunction. So I'm just curious about how a rule like that, a law like that, is enforced.
That's great. Great question. And let me just answer to you. In New York State, for kindergarten, the law doesn't allow district to take much action. I did advocate for the law to change here in Rochester, and we got some modification. But for the rest of the population, for first grader, New York State in 1874, we make school mandatory for 6 years old through 16. So any child that is 6 through 16 is required to be in school, or homeschool, or private school. But the way the district go about in Rochester and elsewhere, we try to work with the family first. And when that fail, the only vehicle that we have available to us is the family court system. The challenge in Rochester that we're facing, eventually we're going to have to win the hearts on minds of families and community is that we had over 10,000 children that were chronically absent last year. So you can imagine how much resources we would have to put if we were to begin to only rely in the court system. So which is very clear on the educational law what the district had to do. Once we determined that a child is not coming to school, we had to assess why. For example, there's an incredible amount of responsibility on the part of the district. If a child, for example, is not coming to school because he or she is ill, we are required to provide instruction either at the hospital or at home if it's because of illness. At the end of the day, in my view, and all the state had tried this to be more punitive, we're trying to use a more supporter approach based on the challenge that family faces. We do have community agency organization through the United Way and other that are trying to help us to also provide support to families who for whatever reason had difficulty helping us getting the children to school. So we are using multiple approaches here. This is, we've been at this for the past 2 years. Social issue like this don't change overnight, but I'm confident that us working as a community will solve this problem. And I don't want to ignore your question, what is the district is doing? The district alone will not be able to solve this problem using the court system or using education law. I know that all the district had tried, and the best evidence up there say that you had to engage the entire community, the entire families. And as a district, we also need to improve as well. Like, for example, offering exciting program like the one that your daughter is going through, School 12. Every time I go there, I live with joy. And it's not just because many of the kids are speaking Spanish and it's much easier for me, but I see the smile on children's faces and how comfortable they are there.
Mayor Lovely Warren has signaled support for charter schools in many ways, and we've had a number of listeners of this program who want to know where you stand on charter schools.
In terms of charter school, all my energy right now is going to make the system work for kids. Now, I know I'm for any school that meet the needs of our children, that be private, public, or traditional public school or charter school. Charter school, to us, represent an opportunity for us to learn from them. There are some charter school, for example, that are doing much better than we are, and there are some that are doing equally as poor as we are. And we could learn from both of them. I'm not hostile to charter school. I do believe that actually when district engage in an adversarial situation with charter school, that's very unwise. And as a superintendent, you will tell you that when we treat them as a partner in trying to meet the needs of children here. And I want all schools to succeed, whether they're charter or whether they're public. But at the end of the day, public education system here, we need to work to improve it. Because everybody will agree with me that even the people who believe that charter school is an important choice for families, that you will need a healthy public school system. And my hope was with charter school is that they will be like incubator that give us some great idea, but we even have great ideas within our district. But again, you can in a system that doesn't pay attention to the fundamental. It's like building a house and we are a strong foundation. So what we're trying to do is to concentrate on the fundamental, the ABC, attendance, behavior and discipline, and helping our children complete their coursework. We also are addressing the summer learning loss, because we do know that children in poverty suffer the most during the summer. So we are, I will tell you that if we do what we're trying to do well, we are going to succeed.
How's your relationship with the mayor?
It's great. We have a very cordial, open, working relationship. We serve the same families. We serve the same community. And we know each other for a very long time.
How's your relationship with the board, and in particular someone like Mr. Van White? I know there was an incident earlier this year that the Democrat and Chronicle kind of reported on, in which they received a letter about Mr. White sort of maligning his own personal failings, and there was some evidence that it came from either Pat or Patty Melgiri. Patty, of course, has worked with you. They have said that they didn't think they were involved with that, but that looked like there were some rough relations at the time between yourself and Mr. White. How are things now?
Yeah, we have a very good working relationship. I'm terrible sorry to for that situation. Again, we moving past us. This is about our children and our students. Mrs. Maggiore has the highest integrity. She said that she wasn't part of, and I believe that. And for the sake of our students, we need to work together. There's no other choice in here. Nothing great happens unless you work together. Now, I will tell you that I do have fear that we will get distracted here. And if we get distracted, when I first came here, I had a 35 school moving around that being face in, face out, closing up, a system that need to provide more stability to our children. And there are those who still believe that I should engage in a long-term strategic plan. I'm engaged in a long-term fundamental plan to do what works the most. And I also engage in making sure that we have the resources available to pay for the programs that our children deserve and need.
Got a lot of questions on Common Core, and I know you do too. Everyone in education does these days. What's the update that you would offer in terms of where Common Core stands and your feelings on not just Common Core's implementation, which people have criticized, but the standards themselves?
Yeah, every child needs access to a strong curriculum. People confuse the Common Core. It's not a curriculum. It's a set of standards. For example, a school like Wilson that has an IB, the IB curriculum meet those standards. The region curriculum meet those standards. The AP curriculum meet those standards. So no one complain about the IB curriculum or the AP or the region curriculum. But sometimes I'm afraid that I have become so political that sometimes we cannot have a honest discussion, and for example, which I do understand that when you're dealing with children, it's very sensitive. At the end of the day, is that we need to educate our children to function effectively in a highly complex society. It used to be that if you didn't graduate from high school, there were more opportunities for you. So today we have to be more cognizant that it's not just about graduating kid, but it's also graduating kid with the skill set to be successful.
So there are some good parts of Common Core.
Oh, the standards, no one argue that the standards are excellent. Absolutely. What people, which is always having a debate in the nation, remember whole language, basic phonic, and this is no new. The approaches in education are always subject for debate because after all, we're dealing with children, that could be healthy. Unfortunately, around the Common Core, it's highly political. People misunderstand assessment, for example. I'm one who believe that you should not overdo assessment, but you need to do some kind of assessment.
Yeah, I got about a minute left here, but people do think that kids in many ways are overly tested. They're tested all the time. It handcuffs teachers. Those are the common arguments, whether I agree or disagree. It sounds like you have some sympathy for that argument.
Of course, we are given more tests than, and we, some cases, self-inflicted. For example, the you don't have to do as many testing as we're doing, but we have an evaluation system that we could. And we last year eliminated 220,000 tests. So we made some progress last year, and we can make even more progress this year to do less testing.
Bohan Vargas has been my guest for the hour here, and we appreciate his time here. At the end of the school year, what are your expectations on attendance?
95% every day. It's my expectation, and I hope that that's become the community expectation, because if it's mine, it's meaningless.
You're going to drill that into this community, aren't you?
Will you help?
Well, I mean, look, I think this is one of those cases where you go, everybody benefits. If that actually happens, the numbers, the data indicates it, and that fell short on first day, but I know you're working toward it. Thanks for updating us.
Thank you.
See you back here again soon, we hope.
Thank you.
Dr. Bohan Vargas, our Rochester City School Superintendent. Short break, and we're looking at lessons from Ray and Janae Rice next hour. Stay with us.